from the Third Unitarian Church on Chicago's West Side, it's Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show. For the next 2 hours, join Mike as he discusses urban sustainability, home and community gardens, and green neighborhood living. Sponsored by CETA. CETA works in partnership with communities to promote healthy and sustainable living. The United Food and Commercial Workers Local 881, a voice for working families. The St. Paul Lutheran School in Austin, offering a fine Christian education to students in kindergarten through 8th grade. The PCC Community Wellness Center, providing comprehensive, high-quality, accessible, and affordable primary health care, preventative education, and supportive services. And Consolidated Printing, pioneering the green revolution in printing since 1973. And now, live from the Austin neighborhood on Chicago's West Side, it's Mike Novak.
We are live once again. We return. Thank you.
It's a great crowd.
We have returned to the scene of the crime. We are back at the Third Unitarian Church in the Austin neighborhood. Last year, it was rooted in Austin. Today, it's growing in Austin because we have moved a year forward, and we are going to talk about the issues, a lot of the issues we talked about last year, which is urban agriculture, sustainability, healthy neighborhoods, and that's why we're out here. In fact, before I came in to the church today, I went out back. The garden is up and running. Let's hear it for the garden in the back of the Third Unitarian Church. We'll get to the Brian Coble in just a second. I want to let everybody know that Debbie Hillman is here today. She was here with us last year. She's the co-founder of the Evanston Food Policy Council, and she's been with the Illinois. Well, she was on the task force, the Illinois Local and Organic Food and Farm Task Force, which is now the. Grab that mic. The Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs. They just switched some things. They added jobs and took out organic and, yeah. Orrin Williams is here. He's the director of new project development and case management for Growing Home, and he's the executive director of the Center for Urban Transformation.
No longer with Growing Home.
You're no longer with Growing Home. Okay. What? They kick you out?
I can speak on my own terms.
Oh, that's great. Well, then it's just the Center for Urban Transformation now. Fabulous. Next to him, Carrie Lofton, who's with the Illinois Department of Agriculture, in the office of the director. And I understand you grew up in this neighborhood.
Yes, I did. I used to live on LeClaire and Ferdinand, so I'm a native of the Austin area.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. That's fabulous. And now that you're working for the Department of Agriculture, we can talk about the initiatives going on in the state of Illinois and, of course, the city of Chicago. Robert Urso is the president and CEO of PCC Community Wellness Center, and that is right in the neighborhood as well. And you just have a brand new building that you put up.
Yeah, we have a new building, a LEED certified building, and we opened it up in January, and we've been providing services to the Austin community since 1992.
And Patricia Doherty Wildner from CETA is here. She'll be speaking in a little. Hi, Marcia. Marcia Velcher's here from CETA. You sneaked in. State Representative LaShawn K. Ford. Where is he? Oh, hi. You sneaked in, too, on me here, and you don't even have a tie on. All right, this is good. I like a man who is just cash on a Saturday morning. He's going to talk to us about, at some point, I'm going to drag you up to the table here. He's the representative for the 8th District of Illinois, and Debbie's telling me about the initiatives you've been involved with, a lot of local food initiatives, and I'm happy that you're here for the program. Later in the show, we're going to have some call-ins. There's a lot going on in the city of Chicago, and among the things that are being done, Lamanda Joy is with the Peterson Garden Project up at Peterson and Kedzie, and they are transforming that lot up there, and I understand they're going to have 140 plots there for local gardening, which is fabulous. Chad Bliss from Cobb Connection. WCPT is working with Cobb Connection. They are doing their Cobb Alive is a week from today, Saturday, May 22nd, at Kedzie and Franklin, basically. They've got a brand new plot that they're putting in a garden, and they are having workshops. And he told me so, and he's going to be on shortly after noon, and you're going to want to listen to that if you're looking for work. They have jobs working in community gardens in urban agriculture that Chad Bliss was telling me about, and I've got the information on that. In fact, they're having a paid summer internship to learn about farming in the city, and they're going to start doing interviews Monday, and Chad will tell us about that. We also, I think Seamus Ford is going to be here. He's with a group called the Root Riot Urban Garden Network, and that's right in this community as well. They've got a couple of locations. One's at 838 West Madison in Oak Park and 500 North Waller in Chicago, and it's just a few blocks away. So they're also part of the growing in Austin. So all that, that's a lot to cover in a couple of hours. I'm glad you're listening. I want to thank the people who are here. If you're in the neighborhood, you should stop by the Third Unitarian Church. Reverend, the address again is?
301 North Mayfield.
301 North Mayfield. And why don't you grab that microphone, because I am going to start with you. Last year we came here and we talked about these issues, and we talked about getting folks involved in their community, and you wanted to do that, and you wanted to help feed your community. A year later, you've got something in the ground. You must be pretty proud of that.
Well, we are, and I want to make sure that I don't try to take the lion's share of the credit, because members of my congregation will penalize me significantly if I try to do that. But having the show here almost exactly a year ago, Mike, was a great inspiration for us, because it got us fired up and to think creatively about how we were going to try to use that space in our backyard. And because of our relationship with our neighbors, and we have a Head Start operation that rents space from us in our basement, a Little Leaders of Tomorrow, we were able to set up a relationship where we could cut into their play space with the idea that we could have some of the families and the children who are a part of that organization use one of the raised bed lots. You know that I think we covered this in our conversation last year, that we couldn't actually till the ground and that we want to use a raised bed because we'd had the University of Illinois Extension Service come out and do some soil testing. There used to be a house there. They did the soil testing and found the toxicity levels were too high, and so we had to retrench.
What kind of toxins did you find there? I assume lead.
Well, lead. Lead,
mainly.
Lead, I think. And I don't know if we had – I don't see other members who were here that did that, and Gary Zachney of our Board of Trustees was with the U of I Extension person. But I think that there was some arsenic. I'm not entirely sure what the
those are the
list
common
is.
Ones. The two
yeah.
common ones. Anybody on the panel want to address that? Because I'm sure you've dealt with issues, maybe growing home. Orin, did you have toxicity issues down there?
No, not on the site that they developed at 58th and Wood Street. That site was an abandoned industrial site, so it was concrete on the site. And so that helped to mitigate any of those issues. But it is a problem generally, and it's an issue we have to deal with moving forward, whether we're talking about backyards or whether we're talking about community gardens or whether we're talking about commercial urban agriculture. And those are the kind of things that are being worked on as we speak. EPA, IEPA, I mean, all these entities are working on solutions to those kinds of problems.
And that's where you have to start. If you're doing this, mm-hmm. Anybody who's listening is seriously thinking about doing some kind of urban garden, you got to start with a soil test. Now, and first of all, for toxic substances there, but you might also want to do a fertility soil test to see whether you've got the right nutrients in your soil to do what you need to do. It's interesting. We went down to the Gary Comer Youth Center. Mark Ernest from WCPT and I went down there a couple of weeks ago, and they're trying to develop and it's interesting, you were saying, Orin, that they didn't have, the growing home site didn't have those problems, but you can have even more problems than just the lead and the arsenic. They're next to these tracks they want to do this gardening, and apparently it's a stew of different things that they have. They're going to have to cap, you know, before they can put anything on. They're going to have to do some sort of membrane that's going to keep that stuff from coming up. And that happens all over the city.
And essentially, that's the strategy that will be employed in terms of that. And one of the things we're looking at with the Center for Urban Transformation is other kinds of alternatives. I mean, we almost operate with the assumption that you have these problems. And so we're looking at this summer, we'll be testing various container gardening strategies, that kind of stuff, as another method for people to, particularly in home situations, have another option that will allow them to grow food. So we'll be collecting data on earth boxes, grow boxes. One of our partners is creating a mod farm, she calls it. And so we're testing all these kinds of things. And even a low-tech solution like they use in Nairobi, which is just soil in bags. And so we'll plant stuff and harvest stuff and weigh in and try to determine what our yield is and all of that. And you can find that on a blog that'll be up around the 1st of June or so.
And that's the amazing thing. There's so many different ways you can grow. It doesn't have to be straight into the ground.
Right.
The technology is there, as you mentioned, earth boxes. And in the back, Reverend, you have raised containers.
Right. And so we did two types, one with lumber. That had a seat on the side so that the differently abled and children can sit, you know, on the edge of it and be able to maintain plots, and also would raise concrete blocks. Getting back to the question about membranes, is that we had installed that on all the four that we have and did some deeper digging, took out some of the clay, put in some gravel. Then the membrane and then soil to allow for the, you know, the percolation.
So you've got the drainage and then you're protecting the soil above from toxins. And that's where you start. So what are you growing?
Well, I know that we have some of our master gardeners back there who I think are playing tic-tac-toe or chess right now with the produce and where the flowers are going to be. So I know that there was an original plan that they were going to do half and half, half flowers, half plants in all of them, and I think that that's changed. I know that there were some marigolds. I saw the pepper plants were there. There are plants for beans, tomatoes, and that list may have changed or expanded as the morning has gone on, but I knew that we had at least those.
But if you garden the way I do, once you get out there, that one's going to go there, but now that's going to go over here, and I think that's the way everybody does. What's the next step? You've got this started. Are you going to try to get more beds out there? Are you just going to be satisfied with what you have for the year?
I think the plan is now is that we'll stay with what we have and make sure that we can maintain that well.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's the key.
Yeah.
When you do this, anybody can start a garden. It's maintaining it and keeping it going is the hard part. What's the fable about doing all the work? You got to have the people come in and follow through, or you don't have a garden.
Well, what our garden work group has done, and as I said, I mentioned Gary Zachney of our Board of Trustees and Ellen Bardcroft and David and Mina Bollinger, and forgive me if I'm missing anyone from the congregation, Jerry Parker, who along with Brendan Gross have been critical in making sure that we have a compost unit, which we actually just moved to be closer to our planting beds today, along with some other members of the congregation, see Dorothy Wills is here, is to set up a rotation and coverage throughout the course of the summer, late spring and summer, to make sure that the weeding gets done, the tending to the plants, the watering, and all the rest of it. And that's been critical for us in planning all the way along, is that we haven't wanted to make this commitment unless we've had, you know, volunteers who are willing to work with the folks at Little Leaders, the daycare, and the other folks here in the neighborhood to make sure the work gets done.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you've made more of a connection with your congregation through this? Uh, is Is this working? Is this part of a strategy to bring the community together?
Well, you know, I think so, and I'm going to mention that in my sermon tomorrow. And I wanted to get a little bit more background information about the larger perspective on community gardens. We're here in Chicago, and the American Community Garden Association website has, I counted, 35 registered community gardens here in Chicagoland, going from Hammond, Indiana, up to the, I think, Waukegan. But the majority of them are here in the city. And you mentioned the Gary Comer one. There's a great spot that's in North Lawndale that has 15 high school students, working on it. I think I'd like us to have a registered, be connected to that network so that we can exchange information to find out how other, community-based gardens are doing by developing relationships with people in the neighborhoods.
Well, that's a good question about the network. And I know that, Debbie, you're a networker. Grab that mic and pull it over. This is what you do. You connect people. I've known that for years now. And how can people get connected?
Well, the first way to get connected, if you're in the Chicago metropolitan area, as Reverend Koval suggests, there's way more than 35 gardens in the Chicago metro area. And one way to do that is get connected to the Advocates for Urban Agriculture. You can Google that name. This is a grassroots organization for all of the local gardens, market farms, school gardens, community gardens. All food production initiatives have come together and are talking to each other, sharing resources, creating maps of where the gardens are, looking for funding together, trying to figure out how to talk to the city of Chicago, the Cook County, the other counties about policies that would support urban farms. So Advocates for Urban Agriculture is the first place to go.
Yeah, everybody who's doing something to grow vegetables, grow food in the city of Chicago is connected with that. What about GreenNet? They're more community gardens, but is it a different kind of community gardens?
My understanding is GreenNet is specific to city of Chicago.
Okay.
So that's great if you're in the city of Chicago, but the metropolitan area, as the Reverend also said, it does extend to northwest Indiana and southeast Wisconsin. So there's a lot more going on outside the city limits.
All right, and we're going to talk about some of that. We need to take a short break. And I think when we get back, I think let's look at a slightly broader picture about how the city of Chicago and the initiatives here and in the suburbs. We're in Austin, but people in the suburbs are doing things as well, and how that all fits in with what's going on throughout the state of Illinois. This is Growing in Austin. We are at the Third Unitarian Church in the Austin neighborhood. We shall return.
You're listening to Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of The Mike Novak Show on WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Welcome back to our special live broadcast of The Mike Novak Show, Growing in Austin, on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM.
And they do that on their own. They're not even reading the applause sign here that's in front of them. Because, in the TV shows, I think they also have a laugh sign. So, as if you couldn't figure it out yourself. We're here with a great panel talking about urban agriculture issues here in the heart of the Austin neighborhood at the Third Unitarian Church. As I said, we're going to go kind of from the small picture to the big picture here. Let me bring in Carrie Lofton, who's with the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Pull that microphone over. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And I love the idea that you came from this neighborhood and you go to the Department of Ag. Now you're back here to do this, and thank you for coming in. How did you end up in the Department of Agriculture? And then, more important, what's the Department of Agriculture doing for the city of Chicago or with the city of Chicago?
I originally started off with the Lieutenant Governor's office. I worked on some food policy issues, health and education issues, and then I transitioned over to the Department of Ag. The Department of Ag and the Governor of Illinois is committed to securing local food.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important issue for the governor.
Well, I know that the governor is involved because he was involved in the task force and the creation of the local food farms and jobs council, which is the way it exists now, and before that it was a task force. So that is their meeting now, but how is this all connected to the Department of Agriculture? When people think of the Department of Agriculture, they're thinking downstate. They're not thinking Chicago.
We're downstate, but my position was created to specifically address the urban needs for the Chicagoland area. And so I started with the department in August, and I haven't met all of the local groups yet, but feel free to reach out to me. Let me know about your events. Invite me to your meetings, because that's part of my job, to see how the Department of Ag and the state of Illinois can best assist our local farmers and local groups.
And I'll tell you what, we will we'll get your information up on chicagosprogressivetalk.com so that if people want to do that, they can contact you.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, great. let's talk about what's going on, the explosion, and Debbie and Orrin, I want to drag you guys into this too. The explosion, you mentioned, Debbie, that there's far more than 35 local farms, but a lot of them are small, they just go out and do it themselves, kind of the guerrilla gardening method. But what changes would you say you've seen in the past year since we were here last year?
Oh my God. It's just, it's like about 3 years ago when I started, when the task force started in 2008, let's say, everybody wanted a farmer's market in their community. Everybody. That was their perception of getting reconnected to the food system. And I was getting calls then from people because I was coordinator of the state task force. And they come up, you know, they would contact me, and you could hear the excitement in their voice and their eyes. They couldn't wait to start their own farmer's market in their community. And I had to be the wet blanket and say, that's great, but there's no Illinois farmers. So people are now understanding that, and some of those people still went ahead and really worked very hard to create farmers markets. They went and found farmers from Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which is totally fine. But then they also started creating their own gardens and started looking around to see who is growing locally, really locally, like in backyards or on schools, and can we get them to sell at farmers markets? So that is what's happened. People have gone to realizing we don't have the production locally, and so other people are saying, well, we want to create school gardens, we want to do community gardens, we want to do urban farms, we want to make a for-profit business. And so that's what's happening everywhere, and those are the kind of calls I'm getting. I know Orrin is getting them. There's not enough expertise out there to help people actually put these things together, because growing food is not the same thing as just building a building and you're done.
It's not even the same thing as putting marigolds in or something like that. I mean, you have to tend it. It's got to, you have to care for it like a baby. You know, somebody's likened that to raising a child. But taking care of a food garden is often the same thing.
Is about care. That is exactly what it is. It's about care. And that's, you know, part of this movement about local foods and getting the urban populations understanding how hard it is to grow food on a reliable basis is to get them to respect farmers who actually have been trying to make their living, you know, for generations, and then ultimately, because I'm working on policy, is to get the urban and suburban populations to understand that the food and farm policy created by Congress is why we have the dysfunctional food system that we do, and why farmers are basically telling their children don't go into farming. So it's connecting those dots, and we're starting closer to home by getting urban people to understand that it is hard to grow food.
Okay, I can't let that one go without explaining why. If you're going to say our farming system is dysfunctional, and we've talked about these numbers on my show before, and the numbers that 95% of the food we eat in Illinois is imported, comes from someplace else. And then folks say, yeah, but we've got all this wonderful land, and we have all some of the richest soil in the world, and we have all these farmers, and they grow all this stuff. Where's the dysfunction? What's going on? And anybody can jump in on this. If you want to continue, Deb,
well,
go ahead.
Well, just right off the bat, it's we're throwing away our money. If we're spending, we spend $48 billion on food as consumers annually in Illinois. In Illinois, we spend $48 billion with a B dollars. And if we're importing 95% of the food, where's that money going? It's not going to Illinois farmers. So it's basically an economic development strategy.
Why are they not growing the food? Why are they not growing our food?
Well,
and that being said, the Leopold Center in Iowa State University just came up with a study that said if we use 0.3% of the cropland that we have in Illinois to raise fruits and vegetables, they cited 28 different fruits and vegetables, we could create 5,400 jobs and almost $1 trillion, add $1 trillion to the economy, which to me is unbelievable. You mean we can't devote 0.3% of our available cropland right now to grow fruits and vegetables for ourselves? We have to have a study to tell us to do that?
Well, no, the Illinois Food Farms and Jobs Act, you know, we did our own study, and we knew that even before we wrote the study, because, yeah, 80% of Illinois land is working farmland, but 95% of our food comes from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, yes, where is the disconnect here? And it all has stemmed from federal policy that has tried to create monocropping areas of the world. So the Midwest is corn and soybeans. The South is rice and cotton. The Upper Plains is wheat. California is the fruits and vegetables. And federal policies, which have been created by basically monopolistic companies, ADM, Cargill, and some others.
You know what? We're Chicago's progressive talk. You can name names here. I don't care.
Yeah, well... And I do want to say, as an urban girl myself, I'm a Chicagoan, but working with rural Illinois and the farmers, I don't want to disrespect people where they are. And so I'm trying to, the Illinois Food Farms and Jobs Act is an entrepreneurship bill. It is not going to be a drop town model where the dominant urban population of Illinois gets to tell the Illinois farmers what to grow and how to make their money. But if it's the Illinois Food Farms and Jobs, the Illinois Local Food Farms and Jobs Council, and I wish to say that Orrin is a member of that council, is so he can confirm whether you're actually going to do this or not, is just simply going to show the economic potential for growing diversified foods and other farm products other than just corn and soybeans.
And Orrin Williams has grabbed the microphone. I think he's got something to say.
Yeah, I would just want to piggyback off of what Debbie is saying and cite an example. There's a farmer we know that had a bumper crop this past season and wound up losing $100,000 because of corn prices. That same farmer we've had extensive conversations with, and he said, what's the disconnect between, you know, black folk, inner city folk, and me? And how come I can't grow food to sell to you and distribute wholesale retail within the state? And one of the impediments also is that if a farmer has, say, 100 acres and he decides to take 20 of them out of production and he grows broccoli and corn, I mean, I'm sorry, carrots and you know, food crops, if his business is not successful, then he can't take that 20 acres and put it back in to production in corn and soybean. At least he won't get the subsidies that he would otherwise get. So if you take it, you take 20 out, you go down to 80, you're subsidized for the 80, the 20 acres that you got in production, if you put it back in, you're only going to get subsidies for 80 acres. So a lot of farmers are scared to make this transition.
They're afraid to take that leap of faith.
Exactly.
That if they grow other kinds of food, that it's going to be profitable.
Right. And part of it is there's this whole infrastructure gap that exists as well, whether it's for urban farmers that, you know, there's huge potential for, or whether it's rural farmers. So where's the distribution chains? Where are the warehouses? Where's the wholesalers? Where are the retail markets, in fact? And so what happens is that our organization, one of the things we're working on is to create some of these structures. And the food piece is, you know, really in a lot of ways the low-hanging fruit. There's so much stuff to be done, and you know, with lifestyle stuff and education and those sorts of things. I mean, I just met with some people this past week who have an idea for a mobile teaching kitchen that people can go into communities and begin to reconnect people with teaching. One of the strategies we're working on is how do you combine retail with teaching how to cook, teaching nutrition, connecting people with exercise, and also sell them food, because that's how we get back to, people eating well, having healthier lifestyles, and also creating that market for Illinois farmers.
Well, you made the segue for me, so Robert Urso, grab the microphone and address some of the things that Oren was talking about. There's a lot of different choices to be made, and our people... Part of what your center is about, the PCC Community Wellness Center, is getting people to make the right choices.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike. And, you know, one of the things that we do is we provide primary care for chronic illness such as diabetes, asthma, and high blood pressure. And certainly when you look at controlling diabetes and controlling blood pressure, you know, you're taking into account healthy eating. But I have to be able to have those foods available, and they have to be affordable for our patients. So what we're doing is enforcing and educating and trying to empower people with the knowledge that they need to be able to control their chronic illness. But if the community is not able to provide those services, then the patient is left with, you know, where to go. What do I do? What do you want me to do? How can you help me? So those are challenges that we face.
Mm-hmm. And you're helped by the fact that you just got a new center here just a few blocks away that's a LEED certified building, and you just opened it this year.
Yes, we did, Mike. We opened it up in January, and we wanted to create an environment that was appealing, innovative, and healthy, not only for our employees, but also for the community. And the community has very nicely embraced this initiative. Earlier on, we were talking about the soil and some of the content in the soil. We had a situation where there was contaminated soil, and we had to remove that. So you do find that a lot in the city, and because of previous buildings that were there. But, you know, the initiative, and we were very fortunate because we worked with the city, and the city sold us about 6 parcels of land for $1, and we were able to build this exciting center.
Can I get that deal?
I don't know about that, Mike. But
I guess I'd have to set up a not-for-profit or something like that. Okay. Anyway, but that's fabulous. Now, you mentioning removing soil, and this is a tangent for me. You're saying, well, we had to remove soil, some of it was contaminated. I would think that a lot of people hear that and are daunted right away. Say, well, how much effort is required to do that? Of course. What the Rev pointed out, Brian Koval, is that you can just do raised beds, and it makes it a lot easier. So that's how you overcome that. So now you've got your center up. Are you reaching the people you want to reach?
Yes, we are. We've seen a steady increase in the number of new patients, and they've been very pleased and very happy with the new site. Also, what we've done is, beginning in February, we implement electronic health record. Which is provides a higher level of safety for patients and providers, and eliminates a paper record. So that's been going very successful, and we're going to roll that out to our entire 9 sites over the next 12 to 18 months.
And where are the other sites?
We have a number of sites. We have two sites in Oak Park. We have a site in Melrose Park on the campus of Gottlieb Hospital. We have two sites on the campus of Norwegian American Hospital. We have another site. We're actually at Interfaith House, where we provide care to the homeless. And then we also have a site on Fullerton Avenue, just east of Central.
That is Robert Urso with the PCC Community Wellness Center. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk to Lamanda Joy, who's got the Peterson Garden Project going. Right now, you are listening to Growing in Austin from the Third Unitarian Church in Chicago.
You're listening to Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Welcome back to our special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show, Growing in Austin, on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM.
And we're back at the Third Unitarian Church in the Austin neighborhood of Chicago. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all who are in the house here today. I mentioned earlier that we had a number of garden projects I wanted to get to and talk about. We have a panel here in the building, but on the phone is Lamanda Joy. Lamanda, are you with me? Lamanda? There you go.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, thanks.
Fabulous. Lamanda, if you tweet at all, her Twitter handle is The Yarden. That's also the name of her blog site. And you've been involved in a number of projects, and one of the things you started to do was investigate the Victory Gardens in Chicago during World War II and some of the crops that were grown then to see if they were still available. What did you find, Lamanda?
Well, you know, when I was doing my research, I found some lists of recommended crops for the Chicago area that were part of the materials that the Office of Civilian Defense distributed to Victory Gardeners. And I got curious, you know, how much of that stuff was still around. So I did some searching, and I found that about 67% of those seeds were still available, although they weren't readily available. You know, one or two places might have them. So I went and ordered everything that I possibly could, and I call it history re-eating itself. So we're going to try growing out some of those vegetables, those vintage veggies, as I like to call them, and see what they were tasting back in the 40s.
One of the things you told me that I thought was fascinating is that Chicago was actually one of the most successful cities in growing vegetables, and partly because of the political organization here. Tell me how that worked.
Yeah, we were actually the most successful Victory Garden Center in the country at the time. You know, the Chicago wards and the neighborhoods made it really easy for Chicago to get organized with the Office of Civilian Defense and develop a block captain system and different organizations for the different things they were doing, you know, scrap collection and air raid wardens. And the Victory Garden piece became part of that, and it really took off, you know, because we were so well organized. We were able to get, we had the largest Victory Garden in the country. We had the best production in the country, and after the first growing season in 1942, our method was sent out by DC, you know, the National Victory Garden Institute, to the other major urban metropolitan areas in the country as a blueprint for what they should be doing.
Well, I like the idea of the precinct captains getting out there, going, knocking on the door, hey, get out there, and you got to plant. How come you're not planting out there?
Oh yeah, there's a definite definite effort, and it was not cool to not garden.
And now you've taken this gone on to the next level. I mentioned earlier that you've gotten involved in something called the Peterson Garden Project. And what's that, Lamanda?
Well, when I was doing all this research on the 40s and what was happening with the Victory Garden movement, I found this picture at my butcher shop. I was waiting for some chicken, and I looked over, and I was like, there's this picture of this huge garden. And it turns out that it was on Peterson Avenue from Artesian past Campbell. It was almost to California, and it was donated by the descendants of Per Peterson, who's the reason Peterson Avenue is named Peterson Avenue, to the neighbors to grow a Victory Garden during World War II. So one day, you know, the hamster wheel started spinning, and I realized that the block on Campbell and Peterson was empty. So I kind of got excited that we could potentially plant a Victory Garden on the site of an original Victory Garden. So I went to Alderman O'Connor in the 40th Ward, and I started talking to him about it, and he said yes before I'd even given him my pitch. And he worked with Asian Human Services, and within a week, we got permission to go ahead and get started with the Peterson Garden Project. So April 26th, we kicked off a drive for gardeners using social media, and it's been unbelievable, the response. People not only want to garden, but they want to have a sense of community. So we have 140 raised bed plots. They were talking earlier about soil contamination, all this. There was a building on this location, so we're built, gardening on top of a foundation. So we had to go the raised bed way, but I think that's good since we wanted each of the plots to be distinct, and so members and participants would have their own area that they're responsible for. And I'm hoping that, you know, you mentioned earlier it's easy to start a garden, but it's not so easy to keep it going. I'm hoping that maybe a sense of competition or ownership or whatever will help people keep maintaining their areas.
How do you, boy, I don't even know where to start. How do you keep 140 plots going? Obviously, you have to have the people involved. Where did you get the money for the materials and that sort of thing?
Well, people are paying dues. So there's going to be dues for the growing season, and we're using those funds to build the raised beds and put in the organic soil. So on the low end, we'll have raised beds and organic soil. On the high end, we're also having a fundraiser May 20th, a 1940s retro-style swing into spring thing. So any funds we raise there will go for additional things like a tool shed or, you know, some benches or what have you. But it's all funded as they were in the Victory Garden days, all funded by the community, neighbors, local businesses, et cetera.
And I would address this to our panel. As Lamanda's finding out, if you have the field, people will show up. If they do want to, you know, yeah, if you build it, they will come.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing. Do you find that has happened in the city of Chicago, or in particular, working in other gardens?
Well, we don't work too much with regard to community gardens. Our central focus is urban ag, but there are groups out there certainly
yeah.
that are doing
so this
things.
Is, okay, let's explain the difference between what Lamanda's doing and what you do.
Yeah, we're basically looking at it from the perspective of larger sites and more commercial and entrepreneurial opportunities for people who want to grow for market. But that said, we certainly support community gardeners. And one of the interesting things in Englewood is we've been through a series of meetings that brought everybody together, because some of the community gardeners thought the urban ag people were looking at every vacant spot of land in the community, and we had to say no, that's not true. You know, and so they needed to realize that we certainly supported their efforts, and that what's beginning to happen in Englewood with different city departments and other agencies is a master plan is actually emerging that will identify places that are optimal for urban ag, places that are optimal for green space, places that are optimal for community gardens. And there's organizations like Englewood Gardening Association, Open Lands works closely with them. So there's a lot of stuff going on with respect to that.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, Oren, but people in a given community could get a little resentful if they think the gardeners are coming in. You would think this is a win-win proposition, and that who's going to object to a garden going into your neighborhood? And yet, communities do have territorial imperatives, and they want to protect their land, and they want to make sure that it's not overrun by outsiders. And it had never actually occurred to me that people might behave that way and that they might question your motives.
Well, I think it's especially true in Englewood, given the fact that you did have Growing Home develop a site there. And it's, you know, a year-round urban ag site. And so, again, some of the people were feeling that that was going to be, you know, the centerpiece of everything that was happening. And you have to have these community dialogues, and that's one reason why Karen Lehman from Fresh Taste and myself organized that initiative so everybody can come to the table and sit down and talk about what was going on and what was going to be happening and what people's roles could be or should be. And again, to mitigate any erroneous notions people may have had about people's intentions. So all in all, that's been a very good process.
LaManda, yours is quite different. Yours is a community garden, correct?
Yes, it is.
And so people can buy into it. Do you anticipate any of that produce going to market?
Well, that's interesting. Not directly, but we were trying to figure out ways to raise money, and so we came up with this program that we're calling Farm For You, and that allows people that may want to garden, or they may want the produce, but they don't want to garden. So we'll have volunteers taking care of their plots, and I know some restaurants have been interested in that, but I don't know if anybody would actually be selling that produce. Mm-hmm. We do want to work with some of the food pantries in the 40th Ward to give any extra stuff, you know, on Saturdays, collect whatever people can't use and take that over. So we'll be
Orin's
doing that.
And nodding here. He's nodding because that's obviously a way to go. And I can't believe, you know, we 55 minutes into the program, we're first saying that obviously if you grow food, one of the things you can do is just donate it.
Right.
It's just give it to people who need it. You know, you're going to have more than you need probably.
Yeah.
So give it away. Do some good with it.
Yeah, you know, and if I can just mention, there's an organization called ampleharvest.org, and they have a database of food pantries. So if you're a gardener and you have extra stuff, you put in your zip code, and they can show you where the nearest food pantry is. So makes
sense.
Yeah,
that is ampleharvest.org. I talked to the guy who runs the site, and he actually said to me that he wants to get more Chicago connections because I think they're based on the East Coast, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Gary, he and I have been playing phone tag, but yeah.
I've talked to him, and I need to get him on the show and have him talk about this some more. Well, LaManda Joy, I wish it were as easy for everybody to walk into the alderman's office and have them lay a huge plot of land on you. I mean, I admire what you're doing, but it's not always that easy. But maybe you're just charmed or charming, and you talk your way into anything.
Well, actually, I did have a plan. You know, I plotted out what the garden would look like, and I talked about my experience and how it would work, and it wasn't just batting my eyelashes.
Okay, if you say so, I believe you. Thank you so much, LaManda. We'll talk soon, and good luck with the project. Keep in touch, and I'll keep reporting on it on my show.
Thank you very much.
This is growing in Austin. I was going to say rooted in Austin. That was a year ago. We've moved on. We're a year forward. Okay, we got news at the top of the hour, and then in the second half, I see the Seamus Ford has shown up. We've got another garden project. We're going to talk to the CETA people. We're going to talk to Chad Bliss from Cobb Connection. These are all gardens in different formats that are coming together in the city of Chicago. We still have our panel here. We've just scratched the surface, so stick around. You know, if you have a question, we might even take a phone call, and we'll talk to you in just a few minutes.
Unitarian Church on Chicago's West Side, it's Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show. For the next 2 hours, join Mike as he discusses urban sustainability, home and community gardens, and green neighborhood living. Sponsored by CETA. CETA works in partnership with communities to promote healthy and sustainable living. The United Food and Commercial Workers Local 881, a voice for working families. The St. Paul Lutheran School in Austin, offering a fine Christian education to students in kindergarten through eighth grade. The PCC Community Wellness Center, providing comprehensive, high
high-quality, accessible, and affordable primary health care, preventative education and supportive services, and Consolidated Printing, pioneering the green revolution in printing since 1973. And now, live from the Austin neighborhood on Chicago's West Side, it's Mike Novak.
And, you know, they do that on their own. I don't wave or anything. I'm not holding up any signs. I'm not telling you what to do. If you want to cheer, that's all right. Actually, we're not going to be for two more hours. We've got one more hour. For the next 1 hour, we will be talking about urban agriculture issues. And we've got a fabulous panel here at the Third Unitarian Church in the Austin neighborhood. And right now, I want to bring in one of our great sponsors, and that's CETA. They're doing a lot of things with us at WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, right now. And among them are urban agriculture projects, but you also do weatherization. You do all kinds of things. Marcia Belcher, why don't you... Shall we go the other direction? Patricia Doherty Wildner, let's let you start. Grab that mic and tell us about some of the projects you're involved in.
Well, thanks, Mike, and thanks to the audience for listening. CETA launched a new green initiative called Grow Local, Eat Healthy. And the initiative involves strategic partners with organizations and individuals skilled in urban agriculture and advocacy. And we are about educating the residents and underserved communities about the health and economic benefits of harvesting and consuming locally grown produce. Some of CETA initiatives, like Growing in Austin, that works to create self-sustaining communities through the cultivation of locally grown produce, is what we really are looking forward to, partnerships in all the communities of Cook County. CETA has been an active advocate of the Austin community for several years. We have several of our partners in the Austin area that does our LIHEAP and weatherization program. And I just wanted to note that in several of CETA's programs, like WIC, Head Start, and Early Head Start, we really advocate for healthy living and healthy food practices. And one of the exciting things earlier today was that when we saw State Representative Ford's little girl out there, she was out in the garden, and she had her hands in the soil and planting some of the items that are out there today. So it's exciting, and that's some of the things that CETA is really looking forward to having more of the communities.
Is that why he ducked out of here? Because
he had to wash her hands.
Is that, you know?
Right.
I was hoping to get Representative Ford up here, but he's very low key. He just kind of darted in and darted out. So
we have a lot of fun things going on, and Marcia's got a couple of the other ones, but it's fun. It's fun.
And this is Marcia Belcher. How are you, Marcia?
I'm great. Thanks, Mike, for having us back on the show. We have two projects, and I want to go back to something that Debbie had mentioned in the last hour. CETA is a perfect example of a lot of passion, a lot of heart, a lot of dedication, but not a lot of expertise. So we have had to rely on, as you know, we've relied on you, and we are relying on Debbie as we speak for our initiatives. We've done a lot of talking here about the urban farms and the community gardens where people have several acres. We're at the opposite end. One initiative is called My Backyard Garden, and we want young people, particularly the teens, to understand that you can start right in your own backyard. So we are partnering with, as you know, the Gary Comer Center, who's providing the backyard for us, and we've had teens submit essays. And three lucky teens will be working with their green teens this summer on a My Backyard Garden project. And they will be growing their own vegetables in the Gary Comer Center area. The other is in Evanston, and it's called Our Community Garden, but that too is very small. And we're working just with young people. We have volunteer teens, and we have a work program through CSBG and the stimulus dollars for young adults who will also work that program. Our groundbreaking is June 5th, which is making Debbie pretty nervous. She said, you haven't done your soil testing yet. And we don't know if those raised beds are treated. So we have our to-do list from Debbie that we have to get to done between now and June 5th when we have our groundbreaking. But the teens are ready to go. They've written their essays.
Some good essays in? Because we're going to announce the winners on my show and on True Star Radio. I don't know if any of you have ever listened to True Star Radio, but it's out of Hammond, Indiana, and it's on Power 92. And I was on...
Can you imagine Mike on hip-hop radio?
I was driving down there and listening to the hip-hop songs and going, this is not what I normally listen to, but it's not so bad. But I met with the kids who are the DJs there, and they were awesome. They were so smart and so nice, and learning about radio in a way I never did. They had the right questions. They grilled me. Okay, you know, they did pre-show interviews. Who does a pre-show interview? But it was wonderful. And in 500 words or less. You need to write an essay, and it's for kids from the 8th through 12th grades.
Right.
You can go to www.truestariz.com for more information. They tell me they've got over a million listeners or kids who log on. I mean, I would pay for that on my show. I would like to have that, but of course, that's the thing. The contest is going to go on. We'll announce the winner on my show on June 6th, and then on True Star Radio as well. And
some of the essays will be published in the summer edition of True Star Magazine.
And if you don't know what True Star Magazine, that's for kids. That's a kids magazine.
It's a teen magazine.
Teen magazine. I should say, when I say kids, anybody under 30 is a kid to me. But the teens, yeah, and it's very popular, and I can't wait to see what the essays look like. And of course, the winners among the prizes get two tickets to a White Sox game. So for all you Cubs fans, sorry about that. All right, but we're great to have you here. It's great to have you here, rather, and have CETA be such a great sponsor of our efforts at WCPT.
Thank you. There's just one other thing we want to mention, and that. The acknowledgement by, I guess it would be the government, on how important fruits and vegetables are, fresh fruits and vegetables. So you want to talk about?
Just a little bit, is that in the WIC program, WIC is the Supplemental Food Program from Women, Infants, and Children, and now where they're able to use their WIC coupons for their vouchers to go to the local farmers market to be able to get fresh fruit.
That's a significant development, isn't it?
It's great. It's really that the program is, like I said, pregnant women. So if they get their food vouchers, they're able to go to the farmers market as long as they are a state of Illinois vendor. And for children up to the age of 5, so 1 to 5-year-olds are able, the parents are able to go and take the food vouchers in order for the children to get their healthy fresh vegetables. So that is really exciting. There's a senior program that is available also through the farmers market. So I think that's a great accomplishment that we're moving towards in the state of Illinois.
And do you see those people taking advantage of that?
Absolutely.
I know you have to get the word out to make sure they know that they can take advantage of this.
All the WIC sites in the state of Illinois, they have information in their local flyers or they're posted. And when they go to a WIC clinic, they are informed and educated on how to use the food vouchers at the farmers market.
So the more people who can get access
Absolutely.
To fresh fruits and vegetables, the better. Debbie?
Can I just add, too, that there is a growing interest in helping people who get food stamps and WIC coupons and senior coupons to access fruits and vegetables, so that there is a new program that many farmers markets now offer called double couponing, meaning you get double the value of those coupons. And maybe Carrie can talk about what's going on around the state. Is the Department of Ag supporting that?
Of course, we're supporting all farmers markets. We're encouraging
the community to go out and support your local gardeners, your community gardens, farmers markets. That's a wonderful initiative that with the CEDA program that allows the urban community to take advantage of using the EBT machines and with coupons at farmers markets. I believe what Green City Markets has that EBT program. I know for sure that they're utilizing that service, and if you're in that area, I would encourage all of you to take advantage of that program.
That's fabulous. Yeah. That's great stuff.
And that was one of Representative Ford's bills that passed, almost unanimously this year, was to get EBT machines, which means the electronic machines that food stamp holders could use at the farmer's market. So that passed. The governor still has to sign it, and I think it still needs funding, too. But
doesn't everything at this point.
Mike, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
We're moving forward with the green initiatives. So when are we going to go back to doing canning, freezing, and drying? I had mentioned that to you. I think that's where we need to go to. I see, some of the places you go to, you still see the canning jars. They're hard to find at times, but I think that would be a new and exciting initiative to bring back.
Well, it's all part of this initiative, I'm going to admit that I've never canned a thing in my life.
And I have, so I have.
All right, well, then you can teach me.
I would have to go back in many, many years to go back to those days.
But you're right. The preserving nutritious food is all part of the
Absolutely.
Effort as well. One of the things I want to do, and Mike, back at the studio, I don't know if you've gotten Chad Bliss on the phone, but if he's available, I want to talk to him. Give him a call if you haven't, and just give me a holler. And let me know, because what Chad is doing, I mentioned earlier that he's with Cobb Connection. And Chad, if you're there, just jump in anytime when you get him online. He's with a group called Cobb Connection, and next Saturday they are doing a Cobb Alive at 415 North Kedzie. Now, Cobb Connection works pretty much in the Humboldt Park area, and they've got a number of gardens there, and this is a brand new garden that they've just installed this year. Chad, are you with me?
I'm with you, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, great. I actually just got done teaching a class down at Loyola downtown campus.
Hey, what were you teaching?
All about food systems, how to start your own farm, just kind of looking at it's the very nature of urban agriculture and why that's needed as far as sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And job development, job creation. So that's kind of what it's all about.
Well, we're talking about job creation, job development, let's go right there, because you gave me some pretty exciting news the other day. You're going to have a summer job screening fair, and how many people are you hiring?
30.
30 folks?
Yeah.
Now, what... for what kinds of jobs, and how do they qualify?
So basically what's going on is there is, I guess I won't go into the funding, but we're going to be hiring 30 people. We're going to be job training program for 4 months beginning June 1st till September 31st. They get paid for 35 hours a week. It's direct service of work, learning urban agriculture, how to plant trees, tree production, food production. We sell at farmers markets. Like, it's really an incredible opportunity, to be honest. They get paid. They also get these wraparound services. We have a job developer, a case manager. So when they're done with the 4 months, they're guaranteed pretty much to be placed somewhere in the green industry. So it's really this incredible opportunity. Now, what I'm actually having a little problem with is the eligibility. They have to be TANF eligible, which means that they have to be on some form of public subsidy, they have to have dependents, they have to be unemployed, receiving some kind of assistance. So I don't know, I'm seeing these people everywhere, but no one's really stepping up to want a job. So I'm needing the community to help out with this.
Well, that's why we're getting the word out. I mean, now obviously not everybody qualifies, but I hope that folks are listening who do will contact you. And what should they do? I see that your interviews begin Monday, May 17th, that's this Monday, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Carroll Care Center, which is 3334 West Carroll in Chicago. Tell me more about that.
So this is what I would suggest, because it may be kind of hard to find. I would suggest anyone who is interested, give me a call, because I'm also willing to meet people one-on-one and just kind of see if they're eligible and kind of like, you know, get a feeling of their commitment to all this. So if it's okay with you, Mike, I'm going to give you my phone number.
You mean on the air right here?
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
All right, here we go, everybody. It's 773-317-2622. And it's just, I can't tell you how much of an incredible opportunity. I mean, the whole point of why I'm doing this is not only to expand production and to develop businesses and farming businesses, but just to really give people the opportunity to contribute to the local economy.
Well, this just seems like the ideal of what urban ag could do. If it's providing jobs for people, this, you know, we talked about the difference in the first hour with Orrin and Debbie about how some of it's community garden, and so it's volunteer, but some of it is about making money and giving people jobs and teaching them skills that they then can use to go forward. And I think that, Chad, that's the most exciting part about this, the idea that people might have some skills that they could use to get themselves employed elsewhere.
Dude, exactly. Not only that, with this expansion comes land. The more land we can consolidate together and grow on, the more leverage we have as far as changing policy for more job creation and development. I mean, that's what this is all about.
And you're getting nods there from Orrin about that. Which, and of course, you know these people on the panel, most of them probably already, Chad.
Yeah, hey, Orrin, hey, Debbie, what's up?
Again, the number, if you're interested, again, give us the qualifications one more time, Chad.
All right, so they have to be TANF eligible, and TANF merely means temporary assistance for needy families. I don't know who came up with that term. It's kind of ridiculous, and I think we need to change that label anyway. But so they have to have dependents. They still work with ex-felons, so I'm really have my heart out to that if we have some folks stepping up for that. They have to be on some form of public subsidy and 200% of the poverty level. So basically, we're talking people with multiple barriers.
Debbie? Hold on. Oh, there we go.
That sounds to me like ex-offenders would qualify big time there, because what my understanding is that people who coming out of jail can't find jobs. I know Orrin has been involved in training ex-offenders in urban agriculture and maybe can speak to that. But if Chad is really having a trouble throwing this out to the universe, maybe he just needs to connect up with a couple of probation officers who probably know some people. So, I don't know. Maybe you've done that already, Chad.
Right. Well, I mean, the problem with all this, with any money, as you know, Deb and Orrin, is that the turnaround is like this. All of a sudden, they got this money. It was Olympic money. They decided, you know, we're not having Olympics, so we need to put 2,200 people to work. And this is completely different from the putting to Illinois to work funding. And so they're like, all right, the RFP was due last week. A week turnaround, they tell you, and now they want you to start next week. So that's the whole problem with the system, too. It's just how the money comes down the pipeline.
You're absolutely right. Sometimes those things happen way too fast, and you can't really properly get the word out or set up your system. And that's a shame, because this would be is such a good thing to have this money available, I think much better than the Olympics, to put people to work.
Exactly. You know, and so what ends up happening with such short notice is you know, it's all in your recruitment, too. You know, it's who you recruit. And if you're, like, say, taking anybody, well, then you have this issue of, you know, retention, of people dropping out. And it makes it really difficult to develop tomorrow's farmers, you know, without this.
Patricia, you look like you wanted to jump in here.
You know, Chad, we could put that on our website, but also we could send it out to all our partners we have in the city of Chicago. We have over 120 partners that do LIHEAP and weatherization intake applications, and those would be individuals that would may qualify for some of the programs. And we have a number of WIC clinics throughout the city of Chicago. So whatever information we can get out, and also maybe contact the mayor's office of workforce development. There's also local IDHS offices throughout the city, so you want to make sure that the information goes in to those sites that they have available.
Well, let me ask you, Chad, how long do you have to get these interviews done?
I mean, this has to go down now. I mean, and that's the other challenge. So also, like, there's also only, we're targeting only 11 neighborhoods. That's what makes this that much more challenging, and they're communities. You know, they're not like wards, Ward 27 or zip codes or area codes. They're community areas. For example, Orin Englewood is one of them. These are all the communities that were targeted for workforce development for the Olympics. So now they're still targeting these same 11 communities, Lower West Side, Lower East Garfield Park, Englewood, North Lawndale. So those are the main areas. No place up north. So that's actually, that's kind of what makes the screening a little challenging, too.
Well, so, Chad, do you think it would help you to get connected with CETA and get, can you, CETA people, can you get this up on your website real quick?
Immediately.
They can do it immediately. I tell you what, Chad, here's what I'll do. I'll put you in contact with them, and you guys should communicate and figure out what you can do together and how you can work together on this.
Okay. I don't have any pen. I don't have any.
Oh, no, no, I just don't. I'm going to call you after the show, Chad.
Okay. All right. That's perfect.
Orin?
I'm just going to say we're trying to help out in terms of Englewood folks as well.
Orin says he'll help with the Englewood folks, too.
That's perfect.
So
that's great.
You guys have each other's number, right? Or yeah, okay. So you get a hold of Orin. I will get you in touch with CETA. And before I let you go, Chad, I want you to talk about your big doing next Saturday, a week from today, Cobb Alive at 415 North Kedzie. Tell us about that.
Well, I don't know what to say. It's a fundraiser. Woo! It's going to be a great time. We're offering three workshops. We're offering one, how to start your own backyard garden. We're offering another one, how to develop your own live fencing using trees. And it's much more, it's not as easy as just planting a tree. I mean, there's actually some really good techniques you can use to help grow it. And it's kind of like art. It's tree art, but for fencing. And then we're doing another workshop, which is a Cobb workshop, which is what our whole agency was built on, actually, which is a natural building material. So we'll be teaching people how to build an oven and how to build a table and a bench just by using what's in everyone's backyard. So, and that's pretty exciting. We're going to have the communities coming together to cook a really nice food for everyone to come, and it's just going to be a really great time, you know.
And it's at a brand-new garden, which you just started this year. How's that coming along?
It's coming great. We just got all this compost laid, the wood chips. We're going to be doing our planting. It's going on great. We're getting all of our stuff out of Garfield Park Conservatory and Christy Weber's greenhouse and kind of transplanting all that. So it's flourishing for what it can be at this time of year. It needs to be a little warmer. I mean, shit, the stars are swearing.
We're going to have folks from CPT there on the site, and we'll be putting them on the radio next week and talking to the people who are coming to learn either how to do cob construction or tree planting or how to plant your own backyard garden. I mean, this is a great thing. And just looking at the site itself, because I toured that site earlier in the year when it was just weeds, and I haven't seen it since you brought in the compost and the chips, so I can't wait to see what's going on. But you can transform an area. And it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't even have to be raised beds, because I know you don't do the frames with your beds, do you, Chad?
No, we just use mounds, basically. And there's a lot of reasons for using mounds. It's what I told the class today. I mean, we do a lot of companion planting, you know, so we don't just use monocrops, but we use companion planting, like cabbage with carrots or stuff like that, which uses different soil depths. I'm not going to go on. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. No, that's all right. But the point is, there are so many different ways to create a garden and a garden bed. And when he says he mounds it, he doesn't use the wood frames or the brick frames. He just piles mounds, rows of dirt to what? What depth do you go to, Chad, usually?
I go to about a foot in the middle, about 3 foot wide.
Which is not that deep. And you plant some stuff in the middle that needs a deeper root system. You plant some stuff on the sides that needs a shallower root system. Often you can plant stuff on the side that's going to put nitrogen into the soil. And you talked about companion plants and that sort of thing. And it's very simple. It's very simple. And that's one of the techniques that you can learn next week at Cobb Alive, 415 North Kedzie. It's basically Kedzie and Franklin. What time does it all start? 10 a.m.?
Yeah, workshops start at 10. Cobb will be ongoing. Food, musical. We got bands, live bands coming. They'll be getting around 1. Food will be there around 12 or 1. So.
And they do want a donation. It is a fundraiser, but you got a sliding scale, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, and if no one can make it, you know what? We have PayPal donate button right on our website.
You're not shy, Chad. That I'll say that about you.
Well, not anymore. I was, but now I'm like, screw it. We need the money.
Chad is what we call in the business a loose cannon. So, but I love him. He's our loose cannon. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to put you in touch with the CETA people, and I hope that folks listening to the to this broadcast will try to get involved with your screening for the summer jobs, and there we'll get the word out for you, and I hope people show up next week at Cabo Live. Chad, thank you so much, and I will talk to you real soon.
Thank you. Hey, can you also get Oren's phone number? I've lost my phone about four times, so I don't have his number anymore.
Like I said, he's our loose cannon.
We'll make that happen.
We'll make it happen. We'll get you the phone. I'll get you all that information, Chad.
All right,
hey, this is really live radio, folks. This is as raw as radio gets. Let's hear it for Chad Bliss.
All right.
Woo. We'll talk to you later, Chad.
All right. See you, Mike. Thanks.
All right, we need to break again because I'm late for that. And we've still got another garden to talk about. We still have issues to talk about. And we're at the Third Unitarian Church in the Austin neighborhood. This is Growing in Austin on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM.
Listening to Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show on WCPT AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Welcome back to our special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show, Growing in Austin on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT AM and FM.
And we're in the last half hour here. Before we move on here, I just want to once again call attention to our great sponsors for this event. You know, we're Progressive Radio. We're also for-profit radio. And it's important that you support progressive causes if you're listening to us. And you know, we're not ashamed to go out and sell a show like this because we're already making connections. We've had some good things happen. I'm going to point out one more good thing that's going to happen because of this show and because of the things we're doing on Chicago's Progressive Talk. But I wanted to let you know that CETA, who works in partnership with communities to promote healthy and sustainable living, is our major sponsor for this, and we thank them for that. UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 881, a voice for working families. Let's hear some applause. They're another great sponsor. St. Paul Lutheran School in Austin is a sponsor. PCC Community Wellness Center, and I think Robert Urso and his people. And Consolidated Printing, they're at all the Chicago Progressive Talk events. And Marilyn, thank you so much. I'm glad that you're here. They're wonderful folks, and they do support us. And you're going to be at the Green Fest next week, too, I imagine. Two days? Two booths. Wow, they're sharing a booth with the University of Chicago, and then they've got their own booth. So all those great sponsors, we appreciate it. Now, I said things happen, and it's really exciting when they do on the spot because people happen to be in the same room or on the phone, as in Chad's case. Let's go to Oren Williams and Robert Urso. You guys have been talking while we were off mic, and you're going to work together on something. What is it?
Well, essentially, a lot of people are familiar with the green card program in New York City, you know, where they sell produce in the boroughs. We've actually been involved with our partner, Shed Studio, Rashmi Ramaswamy and Mike Newman, for several years now to create what has emerged as a bin system, as we call it, a bin or a box. And what we've designed and need to get some more design stuff done, and we're looking for funding to do all that kind of stuff, is taking a box and bin and then applying it in three different configurations, one being a produce cart, the other being a produce kiosk, and the other being a mobile market. And so these systems will be designed so that you can use the bin, and that you'd have to set up the infrastructure to support that. So where your produce comes, where you refrigerate it, how you stage, how you load, all those different entities. And so when Robert was talking about PCC, of course, one of the reasons why we came up with this design is so that we could support entities like his. And so, for example, when they do nutrition education, what happens in the community, and Robert described that, is people come out and go like, how do I apply it? So for us, it means we could locate a produce cart there. We could put a kiosk at his site, or a mobile market could be there 3 days a week, whatever the case may be. So again, working with our partners to design this, we do have a prototype. We like to build it out at this point so that we can begin to test it and refine the design and those sorts of things, and refine the system as we speak. So I think these are kind of partnerships. And earlier in the week, we met with some folks in Humboldt Park, for example, who are trying to figure out a healthy stores campaign. And so how do we get produce in the corner stores or whatever the case may be? So these kinds of systems, we think, help to increase access to healthy produce. And I think the great partnership would be entities like PCC.
This is a tremendous opportunity for PCC and our patients. I mean, providing health care is only one component of a healthy community. Certainly you need access to physicians and midwives and other providers. But at the same time, you've got to be able to apply that knowledge that you do learn when you're interacting with the provider, and to be able to partner with someone to bring those fruits and vegetables and reinforce the kind of behaviors that we're talking about with our patients is a fantastic opportunity to create a healthier community. So it'll be very interesting to see what Orin and PCC can come up with, and maybe next year we'll be back here talking about what we've been able to do and the impact that we've made in the community. So this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where change in behavior can actually take a different direction and be more productive and positive going forward.
This is terrific. I'm glad to hear this. And you're right. Next year, we come back, we do this again, we'll find out how each of you has benefited the other's organization. And Robert, I know you got to duck out, but I thank you so much for being here as part of our panel today. Let's have a
thank
hand
you.
For Robert Urso. We're going to get to some issues. I was talking during the break with Orin about the things we haven't gotten to, and to Carrie. And we want to give you some valuable information before we leave today about where you can go. We've already talked about Advocates for Urban Agriculture. If you Google that, it's the website comes up, and it's actually a Google, what do they call it? Google group. That's it. Yeah, Google Group. But there's always great information. There's always great links there. That's a good place to start. We'll talk about more of those. But at the moment, I'm going to grab this mic over here because the other fellow I told you about with another garden that's right here in the Austin community, Seamus Ford, why don't you grab that? And Seamus, tell us what you've been working on here in Austin community.
Great. Well, thank you. I am here representing a newly created organization called the Root Riot Urban Garden Network.
Which I like, by the way. Root Riot Urban Garden Network.
It's great. Basically, just to give a quick little background, I was here last year at Rooted in Austin, and I was listening to Debbie, I was listening to Orin, and I got really inspired. And I went around my neighborhood, and I just noticed that there's this massive open area surrounded by the firehouse, two churches, Douglas High School, Key Elementary School, the public library, a little ways away is the YMCA, and then the Chicago Park District, and it had been barren for years and years and years. And so I started having conversations with the people in my neighborhood about it. And of course, everybody thought it was a good idea, but you know, nobody was moving a finger yet to take any action on it. And I wanted to, you know, really learn about how is it that we're gonna do this if we're really going to do it. And so Oak Park has something called Green Tuesdays, and of course they're right adjacent to us here. And I went to a Green Tuesday, and I met some other people, a woman by the name of Amy Beltamaki. She's a landscape architect, and she wanted to accomplish the same thing. And so it became pretty clear right away, we don't want to do this as individuals. We really want to come together. And so we had a meeting, and we had some high school students there, and they gave us the name Root Riot, and so we decided to create it as a network.
Should have known it was high school students that came.
Oh, it gets better. High school students naming things is a really great thing. What we have now is we've got two locations. We've got a location in Oak Park on Madison Avenue. It's 838 Madison. There's already 20 beds that are built. We had students from Douglas High School help us as part of their service learning hours in order to graduate. There's a lot of students that got a lot of hours in order to get graduated. So we're concentrating our building days for our two locations over the next 2 weeks. Tomorrow, we're having an open house and some site preparation over on the corner of Race and Waller. It's like 500 North Waller. That's that big location between all of the places I mentioned. And we're going to have a bed and soil and seedlings and an awning, and people are going to be able to come out and sign up for lots. At that particular location, we're charging $40 to rent a lot for a year, or we're asking people to commit to 3 years for $100. So they save money, and they're also funding additional beds besides their own. But the thing that's really been cool is that we reached out to Douglas Academy because it was absolutely a logical community to talk to. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a little bit of a fortress. You know, there's not much of the school that presents to the street, and I couldn't get a phone number, and I left some emails. And then we had our first organizing meeting, and the head of the science department showed up with the community, one of the parents involved with community outreach. And that was along with 30 other people from the Austin neighborhood. So there was clearly a lot of people that were very interested in this. And we met with the high school students, and quickly the name of the location on Race and Waller became Harambe, which is Kiswahili for all pull together. And, you know, given that the students, you know, immediately experienced some ownership of it, they took on canvassing the neighborhood. That was a request that was made of Deborah Graham, our alderwoman, to really generate awareness so that we could really, really have everybody know what we're doing and be for it. And the kids went out, and rather than just put flyers in people's mailboxes, they rang doorbells. And they took it upon themselves to really share about what they wanted to create. And people got really moved. And to date, you know, we've got about 30 people have committed to renting plots. We've got commitments from the park district. They're going to have programming around it.
How many plots do you have total available?
Our initial build's going to be 30. And we have a site design to expand that to 90 this summer if we're successful.
Can I ask a real quick question here?
Yeah.
How do you deal with the fact that costs money? To some people, $40 is a lot of money.
Well, we recognize that, and so I have very unsubtly been urging people to do the $100 so that we have beds that are available to the community at whatever cost they can afford, including free if necessary. Because our real vision is education. We really want to have this be a location, both locations be places where people have never done this before, have no predisposition to it, to come and find out about it and participate. And we've got a distinction around it. We've created a garden coach. So more experienced gardeners will be on site wearing a T-shirt. People can go up and ask any question they want, not be embarrassed, and learn about it, especially the high school students. But the one other thing I just wanted to share about it, which is really quite magical, is that we're simultaneously working with an organization that is within Douglas High School called Youth Guidance. And so they're going to be providing a summer job program for quite a few kids. And we're working on a third location just north of the high school. But what that allows for somebody who's really got no experience in doing this is that we're basically outsourcing. We're creating job opportunities for students, but we're also creating a way to manage a lot of the concerns that the community has expressed. You know, like, is it going to be full of weeds? Are people going to not tend to things? And so there really is a way to, I've recognized that there's a way to find the self-interest of every party in the community and meet it somehow. And that is just truly the magic of a community garden. It really, really is.
One of the things you did that's really important, and I don't think we stressed it enough here earlier, is that you went to the community and let the community drive this. I mean, there may be people like you and others who can initiate a project like this, but it doesn't happen unless the community gets behind it.
Yeah.
You can't do it from the top down. You really have to do it from the grassroots.
It's really true. And the other thing I think is that in doing it that way, you know, what one individual might envision as an attainable goal gets completely exceeded by what the community comes up with. And, you know, I expected of like five people at the first meeting, we had 30. I expected that we would, you know, be able to, you know, get something going. Suddenly the high school is involved. But I think there's something when, you know, we really are authentically having it be a community endeavor that the real exponential power shows up around it. And that's really what Harambe is about.
And I congratulate you. Give us, and in fact, people in this room, people listening to the broadcast in the Austin area, should all come and take part in this.
Absolutely. Sunday, so again, tomorrow, at our location, we're going to have an open house. We're inviting everybody. We really want, you know, people from the neighborhood to be there. We're going to be kind of right in the face of people coming out of church. They're going to have to deal with us. We also
give me the time and the location.
It's 500 North Waller, right at Race and Waller.
And it's just a few blocks from here.
Just a few blocks from here, from 2 until 6. The following Sunday, following Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we're having two work days in Oak Park on Friday and Saturday. Those are going to be from noon on, all available daylight we have. And then our big build day for Harambe is going to be a week from tomorrow, and that's going to be from 2 until dark. We're probably going to have people out there ahead of time, but we really are encouraging people to come out over the next couple days and rent a plot. If you want to donate a plot to somebody, there's plenty of people that want to take advantage of it. And Harambe.
And I like that name, but I've lost the sheet with the. Give me the name of the garden again. It's the
Root Riot Harambe.
Oh, now it's Root Riot Harambe.
That's the name of the location in Austin here.
The Root Riot.
And the website for all of it, where you can get the full picture, is rootriot.org or rootriot.com. And we also are fans of PayPal. For anybody who wants to.
Anybody else a fan of PayPal here? Anybody? Okay, contribute to all the people in the room. All right, we need to break here. Thank you, Seamus Ford. You're doing great work. That's fabulous. And I'm glad you got inspired here last year. That's, again, why we're doing this sort of thing. We are at the Third Unitarian Church in the Austin neighborhood. When we get back, we're going to wrap things up with some other places, some other websites you can go to get great advice. This is Growing in Austin on Chicago's Progressive Talk.
You're listening to Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Welcome back to our special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show, Growing in Austin on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM.
You don't know how much it cost me to get them to applaud like that. I'm all out of pocket change. All right, we got 5 minutes left, but very quickly I want to bring up a couple of wonderful women here who want to talk about something that the Third Unitarian Church is doing and has been doing for quite some time. Ladies, if you would just step up here. Roberta Wilson, the Third Unitarian Church Austin Scholarship. What is that?
We give students a scholarship to go to college, and we've been doing it for 36 years.
Yeah.
At 301 North Mayfield.
At 301 North Mayfield. And Barbara Miner, you're part of that too, huh?
Yes, I am. And I'd like to invite everyone out to our Scholarship Sunday on June 6th here at the church at 11 o'clock. We will be awarding 14 scholarships to 14 deserving young scholars.
I was here for your ceremony last year when
okay.
you did that.
All right.
But
this year we'll have 14 students from all over the West Side and from various schools, and they will be receiving $1,000 scholarships from the Third Unitarian Austin Scholarship.
That is fabulous. Let's thank you so much. I'm so glad you do that. Let's give the microphone back to Brian Koval, the pastor here, and you said the garden is planted.
Garden is planted. You got the flowers, the vegetables are all set. When I was just out there for a walk around, Gary Zachney of the garden work group was out there putting the finishing touches and watering everything down. So we're in.
We're officially in now.
We're officially growing, no longer rooted. But growing in Austin, you mentioned you had some pocket change. We're not quite out. We can save that for the collection plate so we can put that money toward.
I mentioned I no longer have any pocket change.
Okay. Right.
Let's very quickly, in the time remaining in a couple of minutes here, some of the resources that people have in the city of Chicago. We mentioned Advocates for Urban Agriculture. Talk about websites that you think people can log on to or places they can go to get information.
Certainly our website, www.cutchicago.org, and you've got contact information for email and office phone on that site as well. So feel free to contact us. But I also want to give a plug to our aldermen, especially Lyle. Seamus mentioned aldermen he worked with, Amanda, Alderman Lyle, Alderman Cochran, Alderman Folks, and Alderman Schiller, a lot of these folks working on regulatory licensing stuff, all kinds of stuff, and sometimes our city agencies and aldermen get the raw deal, but they're really good folks.
You're right about that. They are, a lot of them are very, very supportive of this agenda. Seamus, your alderman again was?
Deborah Graham.
So, what's that?
Ward 29.
Carrie, you wanted to give out a website.
The Department of Ag is sponsoring the Illinois Where Fresh Is campaign, and that website is basically promoting eating healthy and buying locally grown food in Illinois, and it's www.illinoiswherefreshis.com. And also you can check out the Department of Ag's website at www.agr.state.il.us for more information on farmers markets and programs that we offer.
And what I'm going to do is make sure, well, we're going to get this broadcast up on a podcast on WCPT on chicagosprogressivetalk.com. Mark is saying I'll take care of it. He's going to get all these addresses up there. They are going to be there. So you just go to that website, chicagosprogressivetalk.com. Thank you, Brian Koval, Debbie Hillman, Oren Williams, Carrie Lofton, Robert Urso was here, Patricia Doherty Wildner. Where's Marsha? I don't know.
You've been listening to Growing in Austin, a special live broadcast of the Mike Novak Show, brought to you by CETA. CETA works in partnership with communities to promote healthy and sustainable living. The United Food and Commercial Workers Local 881, a voice for working families. The St. Paul Lutheran School in Austin, offering a fine Christian education garden through the 8th grade. The PCC Community Wellness Center, providing comprehensive, high-quality, accessible, and affordable primary health care, preventative education, and supportive services. And by Consolidated Printing, pioneering the green revolution in printing since 1973.